Hare Krishna, this is Dhanadhar Swami. I really messed up last week and somehow forgot the call. Hasn't been so steady. Is anyone there yet?
Jai Maharaj, it's Reti Krishna.
Okay, thanks, Reti. Okay. I'm sure there are others there, too. Thank you. Maybe, Lucky, also I can call you after the class. Just going to Boston, a few things. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Daksur Unmulitam Yena Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Rapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sa Padantikam Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindhu Baye Bhaja Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Just wait 1 second, I'm just going to have to sit properly here. Okay, so what I'm going to do now in the class until I figure something better to do is just share what I've been reading. I really like to do this thing called prayerful reading. It's a simple practice. I do it for a half hour in the morning. It can be done to 10 minutes, but you pray to the personalities that you'll be encountering in the text, in the mood of audience of the sadhu, and pray that they influence you, influence we, influence one, with some deeper spiritual understanding, and you read slowly through the text, and when you come to a line that inspires you, just read it over a couple of times, three times, and then at the allotted time you're finished, you pay obeisances. I really find it a satisfactory form of reading. And it's really important, actually, to read in the proper mood. To really, because it's not just intellectual. I've seen many people study Shastra and come to the wrong conclusion. It's the application of the intellect in the service of Krishna. 1 second, I got to fix this. So it's intelligence used in a service mood, and the message is revelatory. Inspiration comes, but there's also something about the mind that when you set an intention, it puts the consciousness of the mind in a deeper mode of concentration, a deeper mode of seriousness to receive the message. Bhagavatam itself mentions the process of hearing, which is hearing with faith. And faith is some kind of mechanism of the mind that allows one to assimilate knowledge. And it's a mechanism of the mind that almost has to be activated. It's just like if your mind is on something, if you're inattentive, you know, you're just reading to cover a few pages a day or something like that. Somehow or other, there's a mechanism in the mind that's not receptive to the knowledge. So I'm trying to do that. I do find it enjoyable and very, very rewarding. And what I've decided to do, which kind of excites me, is to read over the Bhakti Sandarbha. But the way I'm reading over the Bhakti Sandarbha, I'm reading it slowly. But when I come to a verse in the Bhagavatam, then I reference it with Prabhupada's purports and see what Prabhupada has to say. I really want to be cognizant of getting the sound vibration association of Srila Prabhupada. It's very, very forceful. It's very, very directed to relevant concepts and attitudes that one must have. I've become attached to getting that type of association. So I'm reading the Bhakti Sandarbha, and it's the beginning of the Bhakti Sandarbha. And it's bhakti means the abhideya, the means of realizing the absolute truth, which is Krishna and Krishna's energies. That's Sambandha Gyan. Conference I had last weekend, they were talking about theologians and preachers, and Pradyumna made such a nice point. You know, what is the qualification for a guru? He said, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's to have Sambandha Gyan. You have Sambandha Gyan, you know Sambandha Tattva. And what is the Sambandha? It means knowledge of relationship. And what is it? What does that mean? It means metaphysics, because metaphysics is understanding the relationship of what exists. The relationship of, as Prabhupada said, matter, spirit, and the controller of both. So Sambandha Gyan, metaphysics in terms of Krishna conscious theology, Vaishnava theology, is to know clearly the relationship between the living entity and God, between God and the material world, and between the living entity and matter, the interrelationship. If you don't understand any of those relationships properly, you don't understand reality, you don't understand God, you don't understand your relationship with God. So Pradyumna made a nice point. One who has real thorough knowledge of that and deeply understands that and sees that and acts that, acts according to that knowledge, has deep realization, even though he may not have so much thorough scriptural reference, still he's qualified to communicate that. It's called Sambandha Gyan. So Sambandha Gyan is the main thing that scriptures give. And it's called Siddha Pradesh. And Siddha Pradesh means that knowledge that implies all other knowledge. If, in other words, if you know Krishna is God, clearly, if you know I am Krishna's servant, if you know I am not the body, then automatically, if you understand reality and you understand the glory of reality, then automatically you try to realize it. And you understand the fruit of doing so. And the example is given is of Sarvagya, the astrologer. Well, someone goes and they say, there is a treasure in your backyard. Then that knowledge that there's a treasure in your backyard inspires you to search for the treasure and to find the treasure and to reap the benefits of the treasure. So the same way, when there's thorough Sambandha Gyan, when you clearly understand Krishna and your relationship with Krishna and your proper relationship with the body and Krishna's relationship with this world, automatically You want to perform the practice to understand and realize it. But sometimes some further instructions are required to inspire one. So therefore, there's the Bhakti Sandarbha, which is a exposition on bhakti. In one sense, it's very, very practical because it's the science of how to practice devotional service, how to practice Krishna consciousness. So when he's discussing that, what is the means, he makes a very interesting point. The means of realizing God is reversing the cause of forgetting God. Just like the treatment of a disease is the nullification of the cause of the disease. So the cause of forgetting God and putting us in the illusion that we are this body and that things in relationship to this body are mine, the cause is turning away from God. And turning away from God means aversion to God. And therefore, the means, the abhidhaya, is to turn towards God. And turning towards God means also the desire to turn towards God. And that's expressed by worship. And therefore, Jiva Goswami references that in the Bhagavatam through many, many verses. And he references it through a section of verses beginning with Savai Pumso Paro Dharmo, that the supreme Dharma, and I really see, and we're going to discuss Dharma today, but Dharma means your essence or the activities, the things you do that bring you closer to your nature or essence. So the supreme activity that does that is yato bhakti or doksaje, is devotion. And real devotion is a hoitiki, it's causeless. You love not for anything you want to get out of that love. In other words, your love is not based on something that causes the activity in the sense that you're doing it for something other than the pleasure of the person you're loving, and which is unbroken. So I read through the purports, and I like that Prabhupada, just simple things I'm picking out that Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said, we have purposely denoted dharma as occupation because the root meaning of the word dharma is that which sustains one's existence. We have purposely, that which sustains one's existence. So it's a very, very interesting definition, because what sustains you is based on what your constitution is. What sustains you is based, what sustains anything is what they're made for. So what sustains a fish is water, because a fish is an aquatic. A fish is made for water and therefore can only live there. So I thought it's an interesting definition of dharma, that dharma is our essence, and we are made for the service of God and can only be sustained or fully satisfied in that relationship. That's what I'm saying. It's simple points, but we have to embrace them so fully. We're looking for satisfaction. We're looking for sustenance. And we know that sustenance is not just food, that type of sustenance, not just shelter. That's just to keep our body and soul together for something greater, which is the satisfaction in the heart, because there's people that are sustained, millionaires that are depressed. Are they being sustained? Doing dharma, are they actually finding the activity which sustains existence, this well-sustained existence, the sex life sustain existence? It does if it's in relationship with making one satisfied to realize the self. In other words, sex life according to religious principles, wealth according to Dharma. So this is very interesting. It really, really struck me, you know, that I'm a fool. Why am I not clued in on this activity exclusively when I know that this is the activity that will actually satisfy myself? I don't know why Sri Jiva, I forgot, but also reference. Oh, yeah. Because, you know, basically we're covered by knowledge, we're covered by ignorance. We're in ignorance of God, and therefore the means of realizing God and the knowledge that that tells us that this is the goal of life. And because we're in ignorance of that, because the reason why we don't see God and we see ourselves as something else but a servant of God is that we're covered by ignorance. Therefore, the great teachers have given the scriptures. The great teachers have given the scriptures. And to reference this, that it's the scriptures, it's Shastric knowledge that enlightens us, it's Shastric knowledge that uncovers us. He references from the Bhagavatam, the second verse. Dharma projita kaita votra paramo namatsara nam satam. And then the last verse says, and simply by agreeing to hear this message, then Krishna appears in the heart immediately. So Prabhupada discusses that in the purport. And he makes a very interesting point. He said the relation of servant and the served is the most congenial form of intimacy. So when I read Prabhupada's books, I try to understand every sentence. The relation of servant and served is the most congenial form of intimacy. One can realize it as devotional service progresses. So what does Prabhupada mean by this? I take it the term is, obviously it's referring to one's relationship with God. We are intimately related to God as his servants. Although on one platform, other relationships can be very affable and intimate, on the higher platform, they are temporary and not real. Not real in the sense that by one's constitution, in relationship to another person's constitution, you're not their parent, friend, or lover. At least you may be on a spiritual, but on the bodily platform, that's not your real relationship with people. And I'm not negating or promoting that we don't have proper relationships in this world to nourish us and to help us. But Prabhupada's talking about the most congenial form of intimacy because it's our real relationship and other relationships are temporary. So it's the most congenial, really. So the actual, that will gradually give one the clue to actual life, because this is real life. This is real life because it's the nature of the soul, which is eternal. It's who you actually are, and your eternal relationship is in relationship to the Supreme Absolute Truth. And that will satisfy ultimately, fully, this desire we have for intimacy or love. Good. Another thing in that, so Prabhupada's talking about how, you know, at once, that verse says at once, simply by agreeing to hear this message, and at once Krishna appears in the heart. So Prabhupada also makes a very interesting statement. He said the process is simple, but the application is difficult. So how is the process of devotional service simple, and how is the application difficult? The process is simple because there's no material prerequisite: caste, ashram, age, gender, species. There's no prerequisite, material prerequisite. So therefore, at any time, in any condition, you can perform devotional service. This is one of the Chaturshloki Bhagavatams, when it describes, one of the verses describes the Abhideya, the means of realizing the absolute truth, describes Sarvada Sarvata, anywhere and anywhere. Everywhere and anywhere, Prabhupada describes as species. It doesn't matter, you can always serve. There's verses like that. Just as one can take bath in the month of Magh. I've been in Kumbh Mela, freezing in January. But whoever comes to the confluence of the Triveni, they don't say you have to be a Brahmin. They say, only the men do this. They don't say you have to be a sannyasi, you have to be renounced. Gyan, the process of Gyan, you have to be a sannyasi, you have to be a renunciate to take up the path. You have to go to the Himalayas, it has to be celibacy. There's material purity as a qualification for taking up the path. So bhakti, there's no prerequisite. There's no price externally. Any situation, you can do it immediately. But the application is difficult. Now, what does it mean the application is difficult? It means although you have immediate access to it, you have to do it. And that's a qualification of the heart. And the qualification of the heart is you have to be humble, because you have to surrender to God. So it's a qualification of heart. And a qualification of heart is not a material qualification. It has nothing to do with your level of knowledge. It has nothing to do with your education. It has nothing to do with your caste. It's a qualification of heart that you have to surrender. And I've seen many examples. I always remember, I'm not going to mention who it is, one godbrother of mine could not control his senses. I remember, I don't want to speak too much about it, could not control his senses, but he was sincere. He really wanted to surrender to God and gave his life, although he struggled in doing so, he gave his life. And I remember coming in the temple, this was in Vrindavan, was a perfect, educated Brahmin, yogi, etc. Had such material qualification. He was a yogi, he was an editor of the Times of India, when he sat and chanted his japa, he could sit up so straight. But after a while, he didn't want to do it because it was a challenge of the heart. It was a challenge of the heart. You have to surrender. Bhakti begins, the gateway of bhakti is surrender. That's how bhakti begins. You have to give yourself to God. Anyone can do it right now. You can't perform Gyan right now. You can't perform Karma right now. You can't perform Yoga right now. But surrender to God, you can do immediately. So the application is difficult. So Prabhupada is commenting on these words that immediately, without delay, immediately, one can surrender to God. Krishna's arrest in the heart. Simply, very nice. And then another thing that struck me in this purport, it says, without undergoing the, one second, without undergoing the different stages of realization set forth in the Vedas, one could be lifted immediately to the position of Paramahamsa simply by agreeing to receive this message. So you can be lifted immediately to the highest plane simply by agreeing to hear this message without undergoing the step-by-step, life-by-life, arduous process. So it was really inspiring to me. It's a challenge because it's very, very difficult in one sense. Because in one sense, it's the same point. Accepting God fully, we can do it immediately. There's no prerequisite in one sense. But agreeing to hear the scriptures means reading the scriptures with the desire to accept its message, which is surrendered to God. And if one has that attitude, and really there's two ways to hear, I know it myself. You can just hear the scriptures, but you can hear the scriptures with that core foundational desire that I'm giving myself to God. Please instruct me. I'm a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. And if that core, it doesn't mean that you have to be pure. It means that you have to want to be pure. And if you have that attitude affects everything you do in your spiritual life. It affects everything you do in the spirit. So if you're reading the scriptures, and this is discussed extensively by Jiva Goswami, it's a very beautiful point. If you're hearing the scriptures, and somehow or other you want to surrender, then you will accept its message and surrender. And at that point, you no longer need instruction. Just like if I'm hungry, I don't need someone to sit down and say why I should eat. If someone is full and you're shoving food down their throat, you may have to tell them why they should eat, or why they, or if someone is getting sick and weak and needs food, but somehow is not eating, then you may have to explain why they should eat. But someone who's hungry, you don't have to give instructions why they should eat. In the same way, someone who's surrendered, you don't have to give instructions why they should surrender. And then such a person, he hears the Bhagavatam in a completely different way. He hears the Bhagavatam, he'll read the same things, but he'll read it to relish his eternal relationship with Krishna. So the message is there, and if one approaches that message, and then by hearing it once, you're at the core of material. You're at the root. You're facing and challenging the root of material existence, which is not to be a devotee, not to be surrendered to God. So, a bhakti path means it's bhakti path is getting right at the root. Other processes are preparing you for that, a gradual process to prepare you for that. But bhakti goes right to the root. It's like when you have a disease, you can go right to the root. Or, like, I don't know how what an example is. You know, there may be a boil. It can be burst and taken out, or you can purify your blood gradually. So agreeing to your scriptures means desire to accept its message. It can be done at once. And if one does not have that attitude, he should still read the scriptures, because by hearing again and again who is Krishna, What is his relationship with his energies? What is the process of realizing it? And what is the result of doing so? By hearing that again and again and again and again and again and again and again, then one will be inspired to surrender. And when they're inspired to surrender, they will finally hear that message of the Shastra, which is the main message of the Shastra. You should surrender to Krishna. And that's why sometimes, you know, people may criticize Prabhupada's purports as simplistic, etc., because he just keeps on putting the root out in every paragraph and every thing. He just wants to get to the root. Surrender to Krishna, surrender to Krishna. That should be our focus. That should be, I know, it's difficult. I'm attached to so many other things that are not the will and desire of the Absolute Truth, that are not in harmony with my core essence of who I am and what I'm for, which is to serve and love Krishna. To give them up, it's difficult. And therefore, I have to hear Shastra again and again and again. But ultimately, the message is simple. So on the path of bhakti, bhakti means surrender. So if you hear that message, you can come to the highest stage. And there are examples of that, like Lal Babu, a sweeper. I told this story many times, but he was outside. He was a wealthy, pious businessman. And a very humble sweeper came by and said, "Time is moving. Pass on." And he heard that as the essence of the scriptures, that the world is temporary. Go to the eternal. Surrender to the eternal. In other words, he heard that message, which was codified just in the word, because he was sufficiently pious, because he was becoming already free from material desires by lifetimes of purification. When he heard that from the sweeper, he heard that message as the Bhagavatam and immediately surrendered. In the similar way that message is codified, in one sense, the message of the Bhagavatam is codified. Although it's very, very direct, when we're in the static of our material desires and our consciousness of putting ourselves in the center and seeing everything as an object and responding in friends and enemies with the world, and of trying so hard for material objects with the illusory conception that they will make us happy, even though we know theoretically it won't, then when we approach the Shastra in that consciousness, in that activity, it's very hard for us to hear. But if we do it, hear it again and again and again, it will have potency. That's why I like this prayerful reading, because I know I need to hear these messages. Otherwise, they won't be at the forefront of my consciousness, and I won't be challenged to surrender to Krishna. Any questions so far? I generally find out later who's here, but I don't blame people if they're not on because I didn't meet my commitments last week, and you probably came on, but I'll do a few more and then see who's there. This is from the Gajendra story, I don't know, but it says, as described by Sukadeva, dana durma dhanda, too much wealth makes one blind. It refers how Indra gets cursed. So opulence is a very difficult thing. If you're attached to opulence, and opulence comes in abundance, it can fortify the conception that I am the enjoyer and controller, and everything is an object for my sense gratification. It could, and that's blindness. Blindness is staying in the center because it's an illusion. Blindness means you're not seeing. If you're in the center, you're not seeing yourself as a servant of Krishna. You're not seeing the Krishna as the center of reality. And it can be that with any opulence is difficult. If one is not in the mood of surrender and service to the spiritual master, if one is not in the mood of surrender and service to the spiritual master, the tendency will be to take any opulence and use it for one's own sensual and egotistical enjoyment, either subtly or gross. So that was nice. This is also nice. Although the great activities and transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality God in his various incarnations are wonderfully described, sometimes we're unable to understand them, yet everything is possible, Lord Vishnu. So I like this. It's nice that God's activities are great and qualities and are wonderfully described, but we may not be able to understand them. Does that mean because we can't understand them that we have to reject them? But the Prabhupada says, yet everything is possible for Lord Vishnu. So once you accept God, you accept certain, and you have a definition of God, basically as good and powerful and omniscient, it opens up the possibilities of reality. I remember, when I grew up, one of my schoolmates, I was on 105th and N, he was on 104th and N, and he had an older sister. And that older sister became a disciple of Prabhupada. And then I found out later, and her mother, who was a doctor of psychology, used to shop at my mother's store. Several mothers of devotees in Brooklyn used to shop at my mother's store. Lakshmi Moni's mother also. Shamapriya's mother also. They used to shop at my mother's store in Brooklyn. So that mother of Shamapriya, she came to Vrindavan and Govardhan, and I took her to Govardhan and kind of told the story of Govardhan. And I forgot she made a point. Someone said, well, do you believe that? He said, well, if you accept that Krishna is God, then it's reasonable. If you accept as an absolute reality, then that's a possibility for sure. So I like that, this verse. Various incarnations are wonderfully described, sometimes we are unable to understand. Yet everything is possible for Vishnu. So it's a nice way to understand that. One more, and then I'll ask for questions, and then we'll see. Gajendra assumed the spiritual body when his body was touched by the Lord. So Gajendra, the elephant, he gets caught in the water, and then the Lord touches him, and he gets a spiritual body. Similarly, Dhruva Maharaj assumed his spiritual body in this way also. He's touched by the Lord. He assumes a spiritual body. Archana Pandit, the daily worship of the deity, provides an opportunity to touch the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, it enables one to be fortunate enough to get a spiritual body and go back to Godhead. You need to hear Tatsa. You need to hear that the deity is not ordinary. And you have to develop Shastriya Shraddha. You have to develop faith in the Shastra. You don't hear the Shastra regularly. And by the application of the Shastra, develop faith in the Shastra. Then, because faith is not I believe or I don't believe, it's a realization. It's a depth of realization, and there will be doubts until one attains Krishna, because the two last doubts that one will have is, can I attain God, and is it true, That's one doubt. Is it true? It's a doubt. Is it true? And the second doubt is, can I attain God? So doubts are there. But thinking about terms of the deities, do we see it as God? Do we have that faith that we're before God, that we can touch the body of God, and that we're fortunate and this will purify us? So important. It's so important, really, to live in a world of faith. I'm glad to give this class. I hope to share the Shastra. But that's what's so nice about living in Vrindavan. It's a world of faith. Even though there's so many crazy things that happen there, the way they're destroying the environment of Vrindavan, still there's just so many devotees and so many sadhus and so much worship of the deities. I'm hankering now to go back to Vrindavan just to experience that. So important. But here we hear from Shastra. We develop faith. And it makes me, when I go tomorrow to worship my deity, to be more careful. Hearing is just so important. Hearing the truth, hearing the truth with faith that it is truth, even if what you're hearing is beyond your perception at the time, we do not see the deity as God. We may not act as the deity as God. But to believe in Shastra and apply the Shastra and get sufficient faith that this is true, and then to approach the world with that consciousness enables one to actually see truth in the world. So that's exciting. Would anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Gail, thank you, Gail. Even though last week I just forgot about the class, and I felt that I think the strength of my class is that I have it. And it's been so sporadic, I didn't wonder how people would stay on. But I'm back on, and I like this format of discussing different verses. It's something that I can do now. Gail, you have a question?
No, I'm happy about the format, because, as you know, my attachment is to your realization, so I'm happy that you're giving a class where that's all you do is share your realization.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good. Very nice. Good. Wednesday, Sunday night at 6 p.m., I'm giving a class at Yoga Maya Studio in New York. It's so wonderful I have that opportunity. A studio in New York to share with other people who have not heard Krishna consciousness before, although several people who have will also come. That's nice. The 20th at Gopki Shores, myself, Akinchana Krishna, the 20th of August, and Akinchana Krishna will do kirtan. I'll even do kirtan also. I'll have some prasad. Anybody in the New Jersey area is welcome to come for sure. Anyway, thank you, Gail.
Thank you.
I still have to answer that other question that you wrote me. I'm kind of working on it.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that you're acknowledging it. Thank you.
I haven't forgotten. Okay, thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, I thought this would be a few people. Maybe we can build it up again if I show my sincerity and speak regularly. Thank you. Hare Krishna.